He left a successful career on Wall Street so he could set the record straight on cable news. He did such a great job that even President Trump noticed and asked for his help. Now, he's become a champion for American nationalism and a proud spokesman for the deplorables. He's Steve Cortez, and this is the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer.
Turn up the lights in here, baby. Extra bright, I want y'all to see this. Turn up the lights in here, baby. You know what I need, want you to see everything, want you to see all of the lights.
Good evening and welcome to the Steve Cortez Show. Steve is out. I am Charles Love sitting in. And don't worry, Sean Thompson gave me permission to be here. We're going to have fun tonight. It's going to be very informative, but hopefully you'll have at least half as much fun as I will. Came here, had some ideas of what we were going to talk about. We will definitely get into that stuff. But obviously the breaking news being SCOTUS, we'll talk about that a bit here as well. Some of you may know me. I think most of you don't know me, but I am a contributing writer at City Journal, the assistant executive director of Seeking Educational Excellence. The few who do know me would either know me from my recent article, White Wokeness, which got national attention, or more likely as being half, I prefer to say the better half, of Black and Right here on AM 560 The Answer on Saturdays. We're going to talk about where I've been and what happened because it all kind of ties into the news of the day. But I wanted to get to this biggest news item, the SCOTUS decisions. They always save the big ones before they go out the door, and this was no exception. A lot of my conversation and writings is always about logic and context, and this is a perfect place to start. I, being a layman, I'm not an attorney. We all have opinions, and you will hear a lot and see a lot on social media of people saying what was right and what was wrong and telling you what it really means. And even for those who are attorneys, it's fascinating that it still comes down to what your political beliefs are. And you have to look at, think about all that before you really dive into what's right or wrong or what it means. Because think about it. I say this often whenever some decision goes away against the popular decision and people say, see, I knew this was the case. This is what I thought. This proves X, Y, Z. But isn't it funny that we have many attorneys in this country, many of them who went to some of the top schools, and they may have a different decision on all the legal norms and the way the law should be written, when you should, the government can intervene and when they cannot. But they have the same pedigree, the same education. But the one side thinks that guy is a genius and the other side thinks this guy is a genius. You know, I like to say Obama and Ted Cruz, you know, same pedigree, went to the same schools, same law degree. But half the country thinks Ted Cruz is an idiot. And those same people think Barack Obama knows everything. So you have to think about that stuff as I sit here and watch the TV and see them bringing in all these legal minds to say what this means. But what do you think it means? What do I think it means? I will say that it was fascinating reading articles and hearing people talk about, see, this proves that the president does not have absolute immunity. Again, not an attorney, but I think, why would we think that we crafted a government and a constitution that's supposed to be by and for the people that would let anybody, as the Democrats like to constantly say, be above the law? So that didn't really come as a shock to me. It'd be interesting to see what others think, but I don't think that that's a shock. I also don't think that, based on the two separate decisions, that's what was said. It seems to me that they're saying that Congress needs to go through proper channels and have a better excuse to ask for the taxes. And New York, yes, you can see the president's taxes if it's in the course of a criminal investigation. So there are, it's going to go back to the court, and it's going to be more argument. Technically, it can go to Supreme Court again as to whether this is actually a reasonable request. Because if you recall, the calls for the president's taxes didn't start from a criminal investigation. It started from, we're trying to find dirt and we want to see his taxes. And when he said no and that didn't work, then they moved to something else and it went back and forth. And then when it got to the point that he had these supposed issues of payoffs, or I guess he admitted that there were payoffs, but whether it came from him or where the money came from, Then it became, so we're going to do an investigation on that, and then we need the taxes for that. So we cannot pretend that this was started just because they wanted to solve a crime. But I agree that if there was a crime, that he should not be able to cover up the crime by not giving his taxes. So I guess we'll see what happens from that standpoint. And we all know that what Congress's angle was. I do still think it's interesting that this has been so long, so many months, so much time, so much back and forth. And people think that's so important. Like, what it makes me wonder what they think they're going to find. You know, like, it's going to be, you know, he's been hiding money overseas illegally. Now, the term here is illegally, because there's no doubt that anybody who's worth over, you know, $10-15 million would not be taking advantage of every tax benefit they can with these powerful and wealthy tax attorneys doing their work. So you may find some stuff you don't like. It doesn't mean it's illegal. So it makes you wonder why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want to find, they truly believe there's something criminal, or are they doing it because they want to make him look bad? I've heard on occasion people say that the president is not worth as much as he says he is. So they want to see his taxes to prove that he's worthless. Or they want to see his taxes to say maybe you didn't pay enough, or what percentage he paid, or whatever the case may be. But this is fairly new in politics, but it has become the norm. And I guess we'll just have to sit back and see what happens there. But there was a third decision that came down as well, the situation in Oklahoma. Most people are obviously paying attention to the Trump angle, but there was this decision about crimes being charged by the state and whether they should be state or federal, because if it's considered native sovereign land, you know, they have their own policing and court system, and then everything goes to the federal court and not state. But the thing that's fascinating to me about that is I look at the things that the two most recent cases that the people were charged for. I'm like, isn't that stuff illegal? You know, from a federal level as well, they make it say, you know, the way that we're not attorneys. So the way you read it, and they just give you this brief cut of it, it's almost like they're saying, you know, this guy is charged with molesting 12 kids, and the state charged him, and they don't have the right to charge him because he did it in the Native Americans' land on a reservation. So therefore, you can't charge him state, so he goes free, because it's not against the law, apparently. It's not against federal law to molest children. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with these cases. But I'm sure when we get to that part of the show, we will talk about that. But that's enough of SCOTUS. We've gone over the biggest news of the day. But what I really want to talk about here, if you caught it in the lead-in of the show, they talk about there was some road closed for another shooting investigation. And we all know that crime has gotten out of hand. Something needs to be done. And I want to find out what that is. You know, I am a solutions guy. So many of us, we get upset, and rightfully so, about issues that we think are unfair, or, you know, these heinous crimes, but then we just say, man, that's so bad, and then it stops. But if the crimes continue to happen and you want to have a solution, somebody needs to think about, you know, what are all the problems that are causing it, and what can we do? What can we control? What can we not control? And what we can do about it? And I think that's important. And that's what I say the tie-in comes back to my most recent situation. So as my buddy Patrick Brutus calls it, the tale of two cities. So again, here I was on air in Chicago on the weekend with John Anthony and Black and Right, and I left for an opportunity in New York. Obviously, I picked the best time to move. Moved at the end of January, and we're walking around for a couple of weeks. It's cold. Just can't wait for it to spring to break so I can check out New York City. And, you know, obviously, COVID hit. Not only did COVID hit, but I was in ground zero for COVID, as all over the news. When you saw on the news here in Chicago, in L.A., everywhere is saying New York is so bad. Avoid New York. Run from New York. Everybody, you know, is running around with their hair on fire. I was here sitting in my apartment watching the news, freaking out like everyone else. So you had that. So, you know, and the hospitals being overrun and that kind of thing. And even that part was more nuanced than reality would give you. You know, it was partially true, but it also depended on where you are. It was more neighborhood by neighborhood or borough by borough, not the whole city. So I, you know, had situations where you had an emergency, you had to go to a hospital. And unfortunately, I was in one of those and went to the hospital and was the only person in the emergency room. But at the same time, you're watching these images on TV. They're not made up. That's really happening. It just happened in certain areas. So it was kind of a mix of the two. And it was kind of interesting being in the middle of that and watching the TV and looking around at the ground and seeing what's happening. But then you go to George Floyd's death and the protest and the riots and the violence and everything from there. So knowing Chicago, being from Chicago, only being removed for a couple months, most of my news is coming from there. I don't feel like I'm in New York because I'm sitting in the apartment. So everyone I talk to on a daily basis is in Chicago. So in a sense, I'm in Chicago, except for when I watch the 11 o'clock news. See, I said 11, not 10. I'm already changing. So I'm watching the news and I'm looking at the riots and all this stuff. And some of it's the same, but the slight differences. And I think that you'd find some of them interesting. One is in Chicago, they had a lot of shootings. Now, you'll say, hey, we always have a lot of shootings here, but they kind of spiked a bit. And we didn't have as many in New York at the time. We know that's changed a bit. So what happened was in Chicago, there were more shootings, you know, over the course of 4, 5, 6 days than there were in New York, which was up until this point, the last couple of weeks, common. But what we had in New York that you didn't have in Chicago, well, we had far more attacks on police. So both cities had some rioting and some looting and that kind of thing. But in New York, it was all out war on police. They were running them over with cars. They were beating them up when they tried to arrest somebody. They knocked one out with a brick. It was mad. I would say in 3 days, it was probably 40 or 50 police officers that were attacked. So now we're at this point where crime is rising. Right. And so you look at it now and it's rising everywhere in Atlanta and D.C. and Baltimore, Chicago, everywhere. And you have to look at it and say, what do we do now? What is causing it? Right. We've heard some things like COVID. We'll get to that. But I started to think about that and say, what is the problem here? You know, so what's worse? Chicago having a weekend with 110 shootings, which is more than normal, but the normal might be 50 and 60, or New York. You know, that weekend, I think they had 30 or 40. It's like, obviously Chicago, but no, New York was up 358% that weekend. So I'm like, what's worse, being up 358% or being over another 20 or 30 shootings? So the problem, obviously, is that it's bad everywhere, and we need to figure out why and how to address it. And as for these protesters, I don't think they are addressing it. And part of it is because it's not, you know, part of their program, as Don Lemon said. It's not in their mission statement. So why would you? You know, I like to say, don't blame Black Lives Matter for not saying anything, because look at what they're saying thereafter. If you look at their top five pillars that they want to attack, they talk about Palestine, Trump, illegal immigration, and their Marxist beliefs and the LGBTQ agenda. That's their platform. Whether you like it or not, that's what they're looking out for. That's what they care about. That's their focus. So how can you blame them for not talking about? You're wrong for saying, why aren't they talking about black on black crime? They can easily, honestly turn and say, that is not in my mission statement. And they'd be right. So we need to take it upon ourselves to look at the problems, be honest, be logical, and think about what we can do and what we can't do, what parts we can address, what part the government can address, and what part is the people's job to do, and come up with a solution, because it's really important. And I don't have all the answers. So, you know, we need to bring in some professionals. So stick with us here. Coming up, I'm going to have an authority on these type of things, and we're going to kind of talk about policing, crime, things of that nature, and hopefully come up with some solutions. So stick with us. You're listening to the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer. Despacito. Welcome back to the Steve Cortez Show. Charles loves sitting in. So we were talking about, before the break, crime, policing, what's going on, how do we fix it? And I wanted to bring on someone who knows more about it than me. Joining us here on the live line is Rafael Manguel. He is a fellow and deputy director of legal policy for the Manhattan Institute and one of the people I follow when I want to know what is happening with policing and what we should be doing. Rafael, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want to get right to it. If you had to, I know it's a big problem. It's going to take a lot of things, moving parts to solve it. But if you had to narrow it down to the three biggest problems, I'm sure at least one or two of them people aren't even talking about. What would you say are the three biggest problems that are causing this surge in crime?
Well, I think if I had to guess, it would be the three following things. One is a kind of long-term now trend toward decarceration for its own sake, which is to say this movement within the sort of liberal cities that have seen the biggest spikes away from incarceration as a crime prevention tool. A lot of people think about things like jail and prison as sort of a retributive, as serving a retributive function or as a way to rehabilitate offenders or deter them. But more than anything else, what incarceration does is it keeps people incapacitated from being able to harm their neighbors. And we've seen in the city of Chicago a significant decrease in the number of prisoners originating in Cook County at the state level. We've seen a decrease in the jail population. We've seen that in New York. We've seen that in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, lots of places that are seeing these big increases. So that would be one thing. The other thing, I think, is this move away from kind of proactive policing. We have seen a lot of pressure being put on departments to roll back the sort of number of pedestrian stops that they do, the number of arrests that they make. And then the third thing I would say is this sort of trend toward kind of progressive, and I use air quotes around that even though you can't see me.
Oh, I saw them.
This idea of progressive prosecution has really kind of been one of these, it's still relatively under the radar, but in really big cities across the country, whether you're talking about Chicago, St. Louis, Baltimore, Boston, Brooklyn, New York, San Antonio, I mean, we've just seen Dallas, Texas, and another one. We've seen so many DA races be won by essentially defense attorneys who figured out that by running for these offices, they can actually do a lot more in the way of, quote, criminal justice reform than they could have done through the normal political process. And so we see more and more of these decisions not to prosecute certain offenses, not to request pretrial incarceration, not to request high amounts of bail, to support parole as a default position for the office. And all of these things, I think, are sort of coming together to have real consequences so that when you had this spark in the George Floyd protests, it really kind of lit a flame that I think risks being lasting in its damage.
Wow. It's so much there. I mean, I agree with you. And I was thinking that really, if those are the problems, you know, normally I hear problems. I say, all right, let's figure out a way to deal with that. But people don't understand what he just said, how big that problem is. It's a problem, not just because it causes, it's part of the root cause of what's happening. But like you said, these people are running on this premise. This is how they got into office, like the woman in Boston, for sure, ran saying, right, if you elect me, I will stop locking people up. I mean, your job is to lock people up. And if you elect me, I promise there will be fewer people in jail. And we're like, yeah. We like that. You're my guy. I want you in office. That's, I don't know how we turn away from that. And quickly, I mean, I'm up there. It's a hard break. I wish I could talk to you more, but you're in New York, so you've seen this too. I find it ironic, this whole defund the police push. I was going to get into that later. Tell me if you agree with this. I think a lot of the people, not the far left, but most of the liberals who are signing on to this don't really believe it. I don't know if you saw this on the news, but in New York, they're saying defund the police, but then they got 25,000 calls about social distancing. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think people really want to defund the police?
Oh, not at all, especially not in the communities that are most affected by street crime and disorder, right? This defund idea is largely one pushed by fringe radicals in these communities and sort of woke white liberals in really safe suburbs and high-end neighborhoods and cities around the country. You know, what really bugs me the most about people making those suggestions or calling for those kinds of, quote, reforms is that they don't actually have any skin in the game, right? These are not people who are going to bear any of the downside risk associated with defunding police. And if you're wondering what that downside risk looks like, I would point to Chicago on the weekend of May 31st. While police were busy quelling protests in other parts of the city, May 31st was the single most violent day that Chicago has seen since 1961. And I would ask these people whether they think that's a coincidence.
Well, we will have to leave it there. I'm up against a hard break. Thank you, Rafael Manuel, Deputy Director of Legal Policy for the Manhattan Institute. Coming up after the break, we will have calls. We will talk to you about your thoughts on this crime at 312-642-5600. This is the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer.
Everybody's talking all this stuff about me. Now, just let me live.
Welcome back to the Steve Cortez Show. Charles Love sitting in, listening to some Bobby Brown there. Give us a call at 312-642-5600. Let me know what you think. We're going to talk about more about this crime uptick and what is going on. Rafael made me feel good, I got to say. Well, not good in the sense of how bad things are, but good in the sense that, you know, again, he's an attorney. He lives in this space. He writes about it constantly. He studies it. I'm just a guy with a little bit of common sense that says if I look at this on one hand and I see an apple and you're telling me it's a peach, I just look at it and say, no, I'm pretty sure that's an apple. Didn't go to law school, but that's an apple. And this is what we have here. You see, we got this push to defund the police, which I openly say I don't agree with. But it's, you know, when people try to say, hey, this is what this crime is coming from, why there's an uptick, you know, a slight small part maybe in anticipation. But my point is, how could it logically have kicked in yet? They haven't actually defunded anything, not across the country. I mean, in New York, they voted to take, you know, a small amount. I think, what was it, $1 billion out of the police fund? You know, just $1 billion. But, you know, it's not like they vote that day and then everybody goes home. You know, in places like Chicago, they're talking about it, but it hasn't happened. So that can't be it. So I was interesting. I was interested in hearing what he would say those three things are. And one of them was really the thing that I talk about a lot, which was the prosecutor, which was, I was like, yeah, see, he mentioned that. I was right about that because I mentioned that before. I know when I was on Fox News on Monday and I was on with another guest, and that person was talking about the defunding and some of the other things, which I look at as potential problem down the road. But my point was, clearly, it's the prosecutor, right? I talked to, so I probably know about 50 officers personally. I probably talked to about 12 of them on a regular basis anyway. And now I'm talking to them even more. I'm calling them like, I won't use your name. Tell me what you see. Tell me what's going on. And I mean, obviously, they got frustrations that I may or may not agree with, but that's on the police level. That's between the police and their boss. That's like, you know, an employee saying, you know, my boss is not treating me fair. They may be right, but. And that may be a part of it. That would be an important part as to why police are doing XYZ, why you have a Ferguson or what we may now dub the Minneapolis effect. But the bigger issue is, even if you lock them up, they're out the next day. And this at a time when people are saying the solution to all the problems, the solution to racism. Racism exists, and the way we root that out is defunding the police. It must be, because that's all that I'm hearing from people, right? And you say to that, I think about that. I'm in my 40s. I got a lot of friends. I know a lot of black people. You know, I'm not just speaking to the black people right now, but I'm speaking to the black people. So I know a lot of black people. A lot of them who don't agree with me politically. A lot of people in the middle and who are just like, whatever's best for black people. But, you know, a decent amount of liberals and, you know, some conservatives. A lot of black people. Not one. Zero. Not one. Zero of them agrees with defunding the police. Not one. Many of them say reform. Some of them say that's not even the problem. But none of them say defund the police. So who are these people who are saying this, and where are they coming from, is the question. And I think largely as part of what I wrote in the article, White Wokeness, is it's because Black Lives Matter is not black. Not just, you know, what I said earlier about their mission statement, their goals are not black. I mean, the people are no longer black. So that's why you have this disconnect between what people, what we hear in the radio and in the news and reading newspaper, and what we hear loud in the ethos and what people actually want. So that's the first thing. Until we know what the people actually want, then we're never going to get anywhere. And most people are too busy. Hopefully that changes. Are not passionate enough. Hopefully that changes. To actually, you know, go to a meeting, go to talk to the police, write their congressman, go on the steps of the mayor. They're not going to do that. They're just going to say, if you ask them, they're like, no, I don't want to defund the police. And then that's the end of it. Right. What they don't understand is the reason I stand here at the mic and the reason I write every week is because I know that there's a lot of people out there who agree with me. A lot of people who may agree with me and don't know they agree with me, but they're not saying anything. And what I'm saying is if you remain silent, people think those six loud people represent you. So what you're going to get is a defunded police force. I'm old enough to remember when police response was so bad in the hood that Public Enemy and Flav had a hit song called 911 is a joke, right? That song was not about getting beat by the cops. That song was not about, you know, prosecutors or bail reform. That song was making fun of the fact that a serious issue, right? The fact that in my neighborhood, they're saying, when we need the cops and we call, it takes forever for them to come. So I asked those people who may still live in those situations or who remember that, if it takes an average of 7 minutes for the police to respond in your neighborhood and it's two in the fancy white neighborhood and you think that's unfair, what do you think the response time is going to be when you defund the police? You think it's going to get lower? Right? There's ramifications to this beyond, you know, well beyond the things that they're trying to fix, even if it could fix it. Well, I don't believe that, but let's give them their argument. Defunding the police and moving the resources around, let's assume, giving them their argument, that that will minimize police brutality in the black community. Let's argue that right now. But what is the return on that, right? There's got to be everything else. We look at a cost-benefit analysis. So are we gaining more than we're losing? So we have fewer police brutality cases, quote unquote, but we have a longer response. We have more criminals on the street. Most of the people who commit crimes are repeat offenders. You know, they don't only get arrested once, so they have free reign. The property values go down. People leave the city. You have less money. All of these problems happen because you got what you consider a win on one end. So is that win really an end? A win? That's the question. We'll talk about this more on the other side. And I'll talk about how this ties into what I do and the problems coming down the pipe with education coming up on the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer.
Yeah, that's my kind of night.
Welcome back to the Steve Cortez Show. Charles Love sitting in for Steve. And we're talking crime. Crime is on the rise. What do we do about it? What are solutions? So what are the solutions? We spent, you know, a good chunk of the hour here talking about what the problems are. But, you know, how do we solve it? What do we do? Anyone who knows me knows I'm very rarely at a loss of words. But I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like I was saying to Raphael, if the solution were, you know, like if defund the police was going through and the solution was and the problem was, it's because everybody defunded the police. Easy fix. Don't defund the police. Put the money back. We're good. But that's not the problem. If the problem were, I don't know, the fact that the police needed more resources, we give the police more resources. But that's not the problem. The problem seems to be a mindset, a shift in the mindset. And it's weird. Some of it's political, but it's bigger than that. You have a segment of the population. Some of the people, some are friends and family, people I know and love, smart people who get it, but they can't balance their logical mind with their emotional. They give me a hard time because I'm so logical. They say, well, sometimes it's almost like you don't have emotion. No, I understand. I'm a solutions guy. And my emotions, if I spend too much time focused on my emotions, I can't solve anything. Right. Because I'm all feeling space. So you have these people, again, who will say to you that crime is out of control. When something happens, they're like, oh, my God, this happens again. Five people got shot. That something needs to be done, right? The blanket, something, enough is enough, right? But then they see these bad images of police officers, like, well, we need to get these police officers in check. So it kind of depends on what your definition of getting them in check is, you know, and how you solve that problem. See, I look at it, the policing and police brutality problem. Now, I'm not one of those people who said it's not a problem. Obviously, there is. What the problem tends to be is that we don't, I think the people who are protesting are way off base about the actual volume and percentage of which it happens, and way too extreme in their proposed solutions for it. So what we have is, see, I think we should take aside, let's talk about the police for a moment. I think we should take a pragmatic approach to it, right? What we should do is we should say, if you really thought police brutality was a problem and you wanted to fix it, you would look at it, you would take the data in, take the emotion out, say, I see the videos, I know it happens, but let's see how often it happens. I'm not going to focus on that guy or that guy. All right. So what you would do is you would take that information and start to pare it down, and you would say, okay, I can't solve the whole world in a day. So give me the 10 cities that have the highest reported police shootings or complaints of police brutality. Go into those 10. Now, it takes time. You're never going to solve a problem in a day. So you take those 10 cities. Put all your focus on those 10 cities, but in the cities you drill down. So Chicago's one of the cities. Okay, now you take. So now you got a team of people. We got plenty of people out there doing this. Plenty of money. There's people marching all over the place. Don't say there's no resources for it. You take city. You put a team on Chicago, and the Chicago team will say, okay, now we're just going to drill down in Chicago. We have the high number. Now we're going to drill down into that number and say, of these numbers of shootings and complaints of police brutality, where are they? Which precincts? And then you narrow that number down to the four or five hot spots where the biggest complaints are and the most shootings, right? Because I think if you find, this is not, I haven't done a study, looked at a study, so I don't know, but common sense tells me, if we look at the 1,004 police-involved shootings, killings from last year, that the vast majority of them happened in the same 5 to 7 cities. So it's not like the 1,000 shootings happen in 1,000 cities. So you narrow that down. And then when you get into Chicago, you'll find out that there are 1, 2, 3 precincts. So now you look at those 3 precincts. Now, once you get it down to 3 precincts, you just pull it all apart and you do a deep dive and find out what's happening in those precincts, which officers' names comes up, who do they roll up to, and that kind of thing. And you take that apart. And then you may find what the problem is, as opposed to saying all cops. And then you look at, so that means I get attacked even though I'm an officer or a precinct in a particular city where we haven't had a police shooting or a murder in 3 years. But we get lumped in with everybody else. That's not going to solve any problems. Right. And since every city and every rural area is different, you can't just look at say, look at what that cop did. This is what police are doing, because that cop is only indicative of that cop. So that's the way, if you really want to solve the problem, that's the way you should do it. But no one's doing that. Technically, I can't even say that, because when the FBI did their investigation in Chicago, they got a lot of this information. So the question really should be, what have people done, or all these groups that care about policing, what have they done with that data? That aside, that's just the police piece. No one's talking about, you know, the criminal themselves and what responsibility they have or how they behave with the police, because that's verboten. You're not allowed to do that. Nobody's talking about these, like Raphael said, these prosecutors who are letting people out on the street. Nobody's talking about bail reform. Nobody's talking about the police and keeping in mind that police are human. And they're not perfect, and they have a job, and they need to be held to account, but they're people. So they will react when people treat them a certain way. And then when the media and people are marching every day for 3 weeks in a row talking about how bad they are, but they have to continue to go to work. And oh, by the way, not only do they have to go to work, but they have to work 15, 16, 17 days in a row, 12 to 16 hour shifts, dealing with the worst of society, and you expect them to be the kindest, most gentlest people. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So you have to factor in all that, and it's going to take a lot to solve these problems. But I think that if you look at every aspect, you can get on the right road. But if you only look at police, you're never going to get there. This is the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer.